Coffee Break, where Helena comes to talk.
I am Troy Shockley, and this is the Coffee Break Podcast. Thanks for joining our chat today. Coffee Break brought to you by Cochran Insurance. Whitetail Ranch Center kicking us off today. Paul, you on the line with us?
I am.
How are you? Fantastic. Can you kind of introduce yourself to folks and let them know just kind of who you are and what it is that you do?
Sure. I'm Paul Rogge. I'm a retired Army colonel, retired engineering manager from the DOE world, enjoying life in Montana as a semi-retired person. But as my wife said, retired engineers don't work any less. They just get to pick their problems. So one area that I work in is in resilience and energy related things. But another one is, what can we do for those soldiers who have been out there giving their all, risking their lives to guarantee this world that we can enjoy today in Montana? And every time I drive down the road, I think of those guys who have driven convoys, gone door to door to make sure that we can enjoy this kind of freedom and to bring that freedom to other folks. So a couple of years ago, I joined the board of Whitetail Ranch Center, which is a emerging nonprofit that aspires to build a working ranch for veterans who are afflicted with PTSD right in Montana. And this center would be a place where some of our heroes who have been off not necessarily enjoying the kinds of quality of life that we have, who are suffering, and many of them either not able to hold a job or even committing suicide. It's a big problem today among veterans, and especially Montana. Give them a chance to recover, to have a little better quality of life, and to get back to the point where they can really bring some of those gifts and some of that creative energy again to our society here in Montana, and be able to have a great job, have a great family situation, and really contribute to the community.
Yeah, Paul Rogge is our guest today. He's on the board of Whitetail Ranch Center, and this, it sounds like, came out of a pretty personal struggle with PTSD, is sort of the genesis of Whitetail Ranch.
Yes, actually, when I first checked into this, I called up Julie Tudor. So the co-founders of Whitetail Ranch Center are Dave and Julie Tudor, who are basically moving to Montana. Julie was in California. Dave's been in a couple different places. But their son came back from Afghanistan, and he is a victim of PTSD. And so they really have this personal experience of what an impact that is, and what that means to that person who, you know, was vital, productive, and contributing, and now has a lot of personal challenges, and you know, has lost some of that opportunity to contribute to society. So we've got some real internal energy to drive this forward.
And right now, you're still looking for a venue. You've got the ideas, you've got the plans, But we're still waiting to sort of plant this thing somewhere, right?
We are. Since we want to have this working ranch, and we want a place for the veterans to come, and ultimately we want to be able to have a couple dozen veterans living there, working with horses, growing things, maybe working with the cattle, and learning vocations, that means we need a place. So we have gone through a process over the last couple of years, screening potential properties, figuring out what kind of resources it would take to buy a place, considered a property near Helena over the last year or so, and especially with the advent of the constraints due to COVID, we had to put that on hold and not acquire that property. So we're looking at some other options around Montana, but we're really dedicated on finding the right place and then coming up with the funds to acquire that.
Yeah, Paul Rogge is our guest on Coffee Break, and we're talking Whitetail Ranch Center. And it sounds like a really fantastic place. I mean, there's a lot, and you mentioned vocational training. That's a very important aspect of this whole thing.
It is. So our scheme originally was that we would bring the veterans in, and they could learn trades just by virtue of helping build the place. And so if you're going to help build the cabins, cultivate the fields, grow some crops, produce even high-quality foods that might be able to be sold outside, and we would expand to other potential vocational training. Given that we don't have the place yet, we still want to make a difference for the veterans, and so we're exploring ways that we can move forward with vocational training assistance for some of the veterans who are here and who need the help. And so we're looking into partnerships with, say, the Renewable Energy Association or some of the fabricators around the state. And so we're interested in some of those partnerships and ideas about how we can establish some kind of program and bring in these veterans while we're still working on building a place.
Yeah, there's so many things involved and so many needed. I know one of the things, too, equine therapy has been mentioned as being something. I've seen some of that firsthand, how that works. It's pretty remarkable what some of this stuff can do. And you sort of touched on it, but what did COVID do in terms of just Montana veterans?
So the COVID has really been a double whammy for our veterans because, first of all, some of the big contributors to the problems and especially the suicide rates, which are very high in Montana and especially among veterans, are a sense of hopelessness. And that really suffers when you don't have a chance to socialize with other people. It can be hard to get out and even get some care because, you know, you're concerned about something, but people told you to stay home. And so the COVID situation is impacting the health of these people, and we're quite sure that it's impacting the suicide rate as well. At the same time, Whitetail has been working to build its resource base to be able to get some funds to establish this center. And as COVID hit, a lot of people lost their jobs. The economy is really suffering, and people really feel uncertain. And so, like all other nonprofits, our rate of finding resources has really suffered. And so we're having a hard time getting some of the donations that we need to move forward, even at the same time that the veterans need the help the most.
Yeah, but the neat thing is that you're not waiting until you have that physical location to start working. I mean, that would be a very understandable excuse, right? That people go, okay, well, they have plans, but it's just you're not waiting, which I think is fantastic.
Yeah, I think that's really important, and we have a manager working with us from the VISTA program who is really active and young and energetic, who is pursuing a lot of these potential opportunities with you know, industry, with some of the foundations around, with VA, to come up with ways that we can maybe use the veterans networks, work with the VFWs and the other veteran groups to help find the people who would participate and support this, and then also work with the business entities to identify the opportunities for the vocational training and bring those two sides together so that we can make a difference, because ultimately our goal isn't to have some beautiful ranch, it's to help these veterans.
Paul Rogge is our guest to kick off Coffee Break today. We're talking Whitetail Ranch Center. They're already doing and are going to continue doing some fantastic things for veterans in Montana. And we're running a little light on time, Paul, but I want to mention you have some sort of, is it a firearm raffle going on?
We do. So one thing that we have been able to do with COVID going on is have some fundraising activities. We've had some fight nights, and today we have a firearm raffle with four really great firearms that you can apply to win. So if you go to whitetailranchcenter.org, so Whitetail Ranch Center is all one word, you can find on our website a link to the firearm raffle. And so tickets are just $30 for one or $25 each if you buy more than one. And there's some great guns out there, 300 Magnum rifle that's beautiful, 12-gauge Stoger shotgun, 10-millimeter pistol, and a nice Western 22 revolver that you'll have a pretty good chance of winning. We're not going to sell more than 500 tickets, and the drawing is on the 10th of October. So you can go online and actually order tickets from anywhere.
Okay. And if people want to find out more, if they want to help, whatever it is, they can do that on the website as well. Is that the best place for them to go?
Absolutely. There are links to all of those things, how to help, learn about what we do, and even to get in touch.
Okay. Paul Rogge, he's on the board for Whitetail Ranch Center, and I'm really glad that you haven't embraced this whole idea of retirement because you're doing fantastic work.
Well, thanks so much.
We're going to have Paul, or we're going to have somebody with Whitetail Ranch Center back on as we get down the road, because it's a fantastic organization with a mission that we absolutely support here on Coffee Break and at the Montana Radio Company. So, Paul, thank you so much for your time this morning.
Well, thanks for the opportunity and the chance to talk.
So everybody go check it out, whitetailranchcenter.org, and then you can get in on that raffle, and you can find out more information about what it is that they're doing. Stick around. We've got Helena Assistant Fire Chief Mike Chambers waiting in the wings. I'm going to go get him and bring him in. We're going to chat coming up. I just wanted to step away from the show for a few seconds to tell you that if you miss an episode, you can always catch up. We're on iTunes, so find our show there or swing by coffeebreak959.podbean.com. Local and area events, city, state, and national officials, your neighbors doing incredible things. We talk to them all on Coffee Break, where Helena comes to talk.
In today's always-on world, your business demands a simpler approach to network security. At Blackfoot Communications, we deliver state-of-the-art security solutions, from the perimeter to endpoint devices and remote data backup, for businesses across Montana. Ensure your company's network is online all the time. For more information, visit goblackfoot.com/security.
Welcome back in. This is Coffee Break, and I'm Troy Shockley. Thanks so much for sticking around this morning. Whitetail Ranch Center, once again, if you want to go check that out, it's whitetailranchcenter.org to go find out information or get those raffle tickets, whatever. And we're finishing today with Helena Assistant Fire Chief Mike Chambers. We're supposed to have Lou in, and we had to settle for Mike.
That's nice, Troy. Thanks, man.
No, we always like when you're in. I wanted to check real quick with you. We've been telling folks here the last couple of weeks about how we had sent a crew over to California. Yeah. We just sent a new group of guys over there, sort of in relief. Is our first group now back then? Or
yeah, they got back Monday evening. It's a full 18-day deployment. It's 14 days on the fire line, 2 days down, 2 days back for this deployment. And then we kind of did a overlap of a couple days of another crew because they still needed assistance down there. With the fires in the western part of the states, I think Arizona's got some fires. Obviously, Oregon's got a lot of fires. Mm-hmm. It's just hard to get resources. In Montana, our season's a little different. By the time we hit October, we're pretty much done. I mean, I know there's some fires that are, right. But the snow could fly in at any time, and resources are kind of coming back. So we felt like we could send another crew down to assist their needs. And they may ask for more, and if they do, we'll probably be able to fill that. Their season really tends to kick when the Santa Anas come in October. They have some drying and the winds and all that stuff. So their season could go through the month.
Yeah, it's almost never not fire season in California. It's just all year.
It seems like it's always fire season. Yeah. I don't know how there's anything left to burn.
Have you had a chance to talk with the guys that were already down there, or the guys that are there now? I mean, what are they seeing? What are they experiencing? Because this is, we know bad fires here in Montana, certainly, but this is something kind of on another level.
Yeah, I have not been able to sit down specifically with them. I communicated while the first crew was down there, and they're back. They're back Monday. They've been tested for COVID because they did out-of-state travel. Mm-hmm. We want to make sure we're safe with the city and the department, with the community. And they're doing fine. They had a good deployment. What they did is they worked 24 on and 24 off. So it was a full, I mean, they were working. When they're on their days off, it was rest day, and then they were back on the line. Yeah. And they were doing a lot of burning at night, doing structure protection. So they got some really strong experience working in a good group of people that have strong overhead, who understand the fire behavior and how this stuff works, incident command structure, and they got to work with people who do this on a broader level than us. So their experience level was phenomenal, and the fires that they saw and the damage that they saw is probably more than, you know, you typically see around here. And I think overall they seem like they had a good experience.
Yeah. Helena, Assistant Fire Chief Mike Chambers is with us this morning. And I guess that's one of those things where you're lending aid and you're helping them out. But as you mentioned, I mean, they're bringing back experience.
Yes.
This is on-the-job training in many aspects. I mean, they're bringing back a lot with them.
100%. And that's a good component of why we feel so strongly about being able to assist in the EMAC deployment. They get some experience that they would not necessarily be able to gain here, because our fire season it's bad because we have a lot of fuels, mm-hmm. but it's typically shorter. And what they can do is go down to California, assist, get some experience, or wherever the assistance is. It's typically California, like we talked about before. But they bring that experience back here and understand a little bit better about fire behavior, how to work a fire line, communication skills, and all the things that come together that they can bring back and help teach our crews.
Yeah, so doing this helps California, and ultimately it helps Helena.
Right, and the South Hills and really the North Hills, I mean, the hills around Helena are all have a lot of fuels. Mm-hmm. So we may be out on anything. We were on that grass fire a month ago. We were out on that, you know, doing our part to help, whatever. So we do have fuels, and we're surrounded by them, and we want to make sure that we're doing all we can to be prepared and have the experience and the knowledge that we can assist and feel more comfortable in that environment.
Are there any other Montana departments going over there that you know of? Or?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, usually they do a strike team or a task force. It just depends on the amount of equipment and type of equipment they do. But Missoula Rural are very heavily involved in these types of deployments. They've built it into their business model, so they have apparatus and they have staffing. A lot of the task force leaders, so it's like usually like five types of fire engines mm-hmm. that go down, whether it's a type one, which is like a structural engine, or a type six or a five, which is more like a brush truck. And then the task force leader is a guy in a pickup truck who just keeps everybody together through the span of control. They're very heavy into that. Livingston sends trucks. Columbus is very into this. A bunch of places up in I think up north, there's a couple smaller fire departments that are able to be involved, and other larger cities do. Great Falls has been in the past, okay. and other cities. So it's really a statewide thing.
Yeah, that's really cool. Yeah. Helena, Assistant Fire Chief Mike Chambers with us on Coffee Break this morning. And in terms of what's happening here, COVID cases now, of course, increasing statewide. Locally, we're seeing it as well. We were reporting this morning on the news. I mean, it was, you know, a week and a half ago, we had 36 cases. And now we're, you know, depending on what comes out today, you know, right. we're pushing towards 150 at this point.
Right.
How is the department in all of this?
We're doing good so far. We're, you know, like I've said before on the show, we have an infection control policy in place already. So we're already on the front edge of that. We've just supported those measures and doubled up on some things. As far as our shift personnel, the guys that are having the contact with the folks on in emergent calls, they're still doing doorway assessments and doing those kind of things. And we're doing well. We're minimally impacted. I don't believe we've had family members, but we're doing a lot of testing through city policy. So we test a lot when a spouse travels or an individual travels. Mm-hmm. So we're really monitoring our travel and what we're doing within the organization, and just trying to keep it up.
Yeah, I mean, you always have to clean pretty well just anyway, like, right?
Anyway,
like, just as
yes,
a matter of course.
Yes.
But especially with flu season coming up, that can really put a dent in. I mean, the right. Helena Fire Department, you think of it as, oh, it's a department. That means, right. You know, we get the idea that that's yeah. big, right? You don't have many guys over there.
We don't. We have 36 that work the floor, 12 assigned to three shifts. So we have about 9 to 10, usually 9 on every day. So it's not many for a population of 30,000 to swells to 40,000, mm-hmm. depending on the workday, or 45,000. So it's not a lot, but they work very closely together for obvious reasons, you know, to do the job and do the work. So, I mean, it's definitely something we take seriously.
It just sort of mentally might yeah. give you a chance to be a shrink over there with the department. I mean, because COVID fatigue is starting to seep in. I mean, right. I think that's a phrase we're going to start hearing more and more.
Absolutely.
Because people, there was that feeling of, well, if we can get through the summer, right, we'll be okay. It's an inconvenience, but right. and now we're looking at, you know, a COVID Christmas, right? Like, so COVID yeah. fatigue is real. I mean, how is that going with the department?
You know, Troy, that is a very big thing for you to mention. It's a very present thing. And I have been personally, when the COVID situation really became to light, we had to write policy, and I wrote policy, and I've been managing personnel. So I've been trying, really working hard to maintain consistency within the organization, and Chief Wood as well, with the COVID leave and making sure people are using it appropriately and treating people equally when we say, well, take a day or don't take a day, because we have families with young kids, yeah. and we're also into flu season. So guys are doing well, but there is fatigue there. So we're really making a concerted effort to make sure that people, when they get time off, we give them time off and we cover it. But when people get time off, somebody has to fill. So there's a fine line there. And I think we're bending the troops, and we're really pushing the boundaries of, you know, just maximizing what we're doing, but everybody is on board. We're monitoring everybody's, you know, cases and life situations, and things are good.
Yeah.
I think it's hard to say who's having.
Yeah. I mean, it's one of those things you can't really quantify it.
You really can't. And there's many levels between family and kids and work. It's just difficult, but we're very actively managing it for sure.
And then recognizing it's going to be individual, it's going to be case specific, but in general, what does reaction look like of, you know, okay, this guy tested positive, now what? I mean, what happens at the fire
internally
department?
Well, it depends on who it would be, but we would Missoula actually had this occur, the Missoula City Fire Department, and the impact wasn't, I think, nearly as large as I think everybody thought, because usually we work in our little pods, and if we have somebody who tests positive, we will isolate that individual. The individuals around them will quarantine them, get them tested, do some tracing, you know, what we need as far as people around them, give them the time off, isolate them, clean the station, double check, all that. And, you know, I don't think it sounds horrible, like it might be a big deal, but
yeah,
we're going to act very swiftly to minimize the impact of the overall organization. Some of the early conversations with other organizations were, we're going to rent campers and park them outside our station. We don't want to send them home and do this and that. But most folks would prefer to quarantine at home. They can just go to their room or separate, and they may have already exposed their families. So we want people to be comfortable, but in the case that somebody can't go home, we'll do what we can, whether it's hotel's a difficult situation because we don't want to cross-contaminate, but a camper or something, you know, there are options, but we haven't crossed that bridge.
Right.
We
don't have to worry about it.
Absolutely.
But, yeah, plans to ensure continuity.
Absolutely.
Are there. We've got about 3 minutes left. Mike, and you mentioned to me you're getting ready to buy a new toy.
Yeah, well. The citizens are purchasing a new toy. We get to play with it. We have an aging aerial apparatus that's a 20-year-old American LaFrance, and they sold the company, and, you know, it's hard to get parts and whatnot. And it's a very heavily used piece of equipment, and they have a life cycle. And we've, for the last number of months, have been going out for specification, trying to maximize the dollars spent for the quality and impact of the truck. And we're finalizing some financing, and we've done well through the levy. The community has very heavily supported us. So we'll be able to pretty much cash flow this through the levy that was that gave us firefighters and increased our capital budget. So we're going to be purchasing that hopefully in the next month or maybe month. And then it'll be here in about a year, maybe shorter. It's Pierce Fire Apparatus who we're probably going to be going with. And they're one of the top names out there, and they build a great product. And that's our other apparatus as well. So it consolidates our ability to fix things and work on things and have one vendor to talk to. But it's $1 million plus, but it's a 20 to 25 year purchase.
Yeah.
And it's going
that's
to
a long-term investment.
It's a long-term investment, and it's going to do everything we need it to do for this community in terms of rescue, water flowing, high level water, volumes of water, et cetera, et cetera. It's a
so there are many instances where you can use that. It's not just a ladder.
No,
I mean, people are thinking it's $1 million ladder.
Well, it's a platform truck, so it can do rescue, where we can do bucket rescues off of the bottom of it for below grade. We can rescue out of windows. We can do elevated water streams. And this newer equipment will probably be out in the street a lot more than our older one, and going to taller buildings and doing a lot more operational stuff. Plus, within our insurance services organization rating, we get a lower interest rate. It helps our ISO score, so it helps the community get lower interest rates on their insurance for their business or what have you.
Yeah.
So it's good all around.
Yeah. So, I mean, we talk lightly about it, say it's a new toy, but
it's a really unique piece of technology that's going to serve this community for decades.
Yeah. I mean, anything that's going to make your job better is going to make our lives better.
Well, anytime we get money from the community, all we do is we turn it back around and give it back to the community in the form of a service. Or equipment to give better service. Mm-hmm. So I think I just want the community to know that the money they give the city for the fire department, we're just going to give it back to them the best way we can.
Mike, I sure appreciate you coming in sort of last minute when Lou couldn't make it.
Yeah.
It's always fun to have you in here. So I give you a hard time, but we appreciate you.
Thanks. Love it.
Yeah, go tell all the guys back there thank you for all the work that they're doing. And that's all the time we have today. That's all the time we have this week. But we'll be back here on Coffee Break again on Monday. We'll see you then. I'm Troy Shockley, and that's it for Coffee Break today. Be sure to check us out on iTunes. Head on over. Give us a review there. That's always much appreciated. Or swing by coffeebreak959.podbean.com. Thanks for tuning in. We'll see you back here tomorrow.